Good Gab, sponsored by SkillSkin, a nonprofit organization empowering individuals with disabilities through employment.
Hey, do you see this color? I do. It's new studio. Thanks to CME, we're right here at SkillSkin now, and our first guest is someone that you've seen on the printed paper, but now they're here on Good Gab. This is Eric Lowe and founder of Spokane Reimagined. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Heck yeah, us too. And you are our first guest in the new studio. We're down here at SkillSkin. Big thank you to Community Minded Enterprises. You guys, appreciate you picking up the studio for us. Been a great partner. And thank you. So, Eric, tell us what's going on. What's going on in your world?
Well, I've been involved with an organization. It's a group of us called Spokane Reimagined. It's based on an idea I had last year to radically change how we get around Spokane by reimagining our transportation system. So the proposal that sort of got people excited and got this group together is a proposal to pedestrianize a network of over 140 miles of Spokane streets. A 2.5 mile tram would run from First Avenue in Brown's Addition, right in front of the MAC, to the Amtrak station in downtown. So,
okay, what's that look like?
So there's lots of things that you can do, but a lot of our members are very excited about the prospect of like a grassy tram, which is a very common thing in other parts of the world, but it's essentially you just repurpose that street space. Uh-huh. We already own that right of way and build tram lines and make it a grassy tram that's, you know, pedestrian focused. And our goal would be for it to run 24/7, 365, because that is the backbone of the hotel industry in Spokane. It's the backbone of the entertainment industry in Spokane. And the Amtrak station gets two trains a day, but they're both in the middle of the night.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So, you know, that would provide people with a safe and reliable means to get from the Amtrak station to all of the hotels in downtown Spokane. But there's, you know, a lot of benefits with a permanent infrastructure for transit versus temporary infrastructure. So, for example, for landowners or business owners, it signifies an investment in that specific block. More so than
a bus line that
would be. And the big thing is when it comes to people from out of town, there's a lot less anxiety riding a train line than there is riding a bus line, because you look down at the road and you see, or you look down and you see, this is where the train line goes.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about ending up in some far off neighborhood because you caught the wrong bus or something. And, you know, that's not to say STA has those problems, because STA has great wayfinding and they're a great organization. But for your average tourist, it's a lot easier for them to envision traveling on a tram versus traveling on a bus.
I agree with that just for my own personal self. Like, I'm kind of nervous when I jump on a bus line in a city I don't know about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the rail line, for some reason, yeah, there's comfort there. I'm like, oh yeah, it will go here. That's weird. There's some psychology that happens, right?
And yeah. when you look at how cities build tram lines, especially when they're repurposing streets, you can see if they do it smartly and they upzone along those tram lines, you can see very smooth densities being built, because the people who live in those neighborhoods or go into those bigger buildings
totally
use that rail line to get around versus bringing their car with them. And, you know, that's a big
thing. Yeah, because you don't need to, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, Spokane is growing whether we like it or not.
Yep. It's an, facts.
It's an incredible city and it's an incredible region. So we have to plan for the people that are coming here. And it's not the people that take up space. It's their cars.
True.
So the more that we can invest in our public transit infrastructure, the more that we can invest in our pedestrian infrastructure and our protected bike infrastructure, the more we can allow people the freedom to not get our, to get around without a car.
I love it. So, okay. So we have this element. We're talking about going from, yeah, Browns to, you know, Amtrak. What about this idea of, you said 140 miles of walk? Yes.
So
walking, like not trails, but like, so yeah, tell me more. I guess I'm confused there.
So the Cadillac idea would be to completely repurpose Spokane streets to be people focused. And that would, if you were to go, you know, the maximum investment of bollards that come up and down in the street and all kinds of infrastructure like public restrooms and picnic facilities and playgrounds, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you can do when you don't have cars taking up that space. But the key is taking that space for cars and repurposing it for people.
Like that prioritization you're talking about. Okay, I can see that.
And when it comes to that reprioritization, it doesn't have to be, you know, these bollards that come up and down out of the ground or anything like that. You can do it extremely cheaply with plastic jersey barriers or concrete planters, and you fill them with flowers. There's all kinds of things that you can do that shows drivers that, okay, there are different ways you can do it. You can either have car free or car light. And when it comes to car light, those infrastructure improvements are a means of showing drivers like, you are a guest here. Like, this is for people. This is for kids. This is for the elderly. This is for everyone who's getting around outside of a car. And there are different ways you can do that with modal filters like raised crosswalks, speed bumps.
Some of the plantings that kind of go out too. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in different cities I've been in. So it just slows you down.
And you know, there's a lot of, there's benefits that sort of stack on each other. So the example that you raised, that's what's called a bulb out. So you're essentially bulbing out that pedestrian space into the street. And sometimes it's concrete. Sometimes, like you said, it's like a garden space. But when it's a garden space, that also takes stormwater pressure off of the street. And
the filtration, all sorts of benefit.
So there's you can stack on things. And if you were to do the Cadillac plan where you're really going through and you're repurposing these streets 100% for people and you're installing all this permanent infrastructure, you can also take that opportunity to install other permanent infrastructure, water, sewer lines, city-owned fiber, you know, lots of things that you could do since you're already
in the ground,
doing the work. So, you know, that's what we're looking at in terms of, there's the initial benefit of making the street safer and making the street more accessible to everyone, but the benefits sort of compound on each other when you look at everything that you can, everything that happens from that initial reopening of the street to people.
Incredible. I love it. Well, where did this come from? Like, where did this idea come from for you?
So this came about, my son was born in December of 2019 and we got a bike trailer the next summer and quickly realized how dangerous it was to get around outside of a car. And
no doubt.
I live in Spokane Valley. I live off of Barker. So it's you know, people ask me, why do I focus on Spokane versus Spokane Valley? And the big reason is because Spokane has a street grid.
Right.
You know, Spokane was built before the automobile and with streetcars. So places like Perry and Garland and Lincoln Heights, these were streetcar suburbs. That's why they've got these little commercial districts. And Spokane Valley doesn't really have anything like that. So that's why I focus on Spokane. But anyway.
Because there's just some natural right-of-ways that have existed before.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
And there's a lot of streets that are particularly wide that you could repurpose some of that with protected bike lanes and not infringe on vehicle traffic. Like, they might slow down because it's not as wide and it doesn't feel like a highway. But they should have been slowed down to begin with. So
I remember I lived on 34th and Division on the South Hill a number of years ago, and that's one of the streets that comes to mind for me. Like, that one all the way down to Manto Park, it's just a really wide street.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just having some protected lanes there, it just wouldn't be hard to do.
Exactly.
So you're saying these kind of things exist all over our city.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the first Ave tram, as I call it, I view as a pilot and, you know, retaking a lot of these streets for permanent transit infrastructure, you know, in my head. And also I've already mapped out, like, what I would see as the next steps of what a tram network would look like.
Like, it could go all the way to the Apple Way right away.
Yeah, it could I mean, it can go wherever you want it to go. But the key is our politicians need to have the political will, and they need to have constituents behind them asking for these things. You know, it's difficult for politicians to get out in front and say, I want to spend $1 billion of taxpayer money. It's a lot easier for them to say, you know, taxpayers are coming to us saying we want to spend this money. Let's, you know, give them the chance.
Seems like that's how it should work too. Like, if that's what our community wants and that's what we're voicing, that's they're just implementing that.
And you're seeing that right now. So
you're getting some groundswell of support here?
Yeah, we've got this Spokane Reimagine group that's very active, shows up to city council meetings, and generally is, you know, active in the civic sphere. And as a result, we're seeing movement on our traffic safety crisis. So right now, the city council is going to be considering a Safe Streets Now resolution, which is going to ask the mayor to implement some of these inexpensive temporary solutions that we've been asking for, recognizing that we are in a traffic safety crisis. And, you know,
dang, so some of this could be implemented here pretty soon.
Yeah, well, the temporary measures, certainly the permanent things will take more time. But the great thing about temporary measures is you can pilot these in real time. So a big problem when it comes to any sort of traffic calming project is the study and outreach process, and the sky is falling down before any a shovel hits the dirt. And if you can show voters and you can show residents that we can implement common sense, cheap, you know, it's a lot cheaper to bolt a speed bump into the pavement than it is to pour a new speed bump.
Sure
that
is.
Sort of thing. It will... You can study it in real time, and you can also market in real time to voters and to constituents. And I think that's a key part, because...
Yeah, then it's like an iterative process, too.
It's an iterative process, and unfortunately, in civic life, grumps tend to be the loudest people.
True.
And so, and for some reason, traffic calming you know, it's a matter of protecting everyone on the street. It's not a matter of just protecting pedestrians or just protecting cyclists. Like, Spokane has a hit over a 30-year record in traffic deaths, and that's pedestrians, cyclists, and motorists.
So we have an issue. We have a real issue that needs to be addressed.
That the city council's recognizing and that they're trying to address with, you know, common sense measures up front. But, you know, with those grumps, they take a lot of the weight out of politicians' sails. And I feel like,
yeah, well, and someone's yelling at you. Exactly. Absolutely. It's hard not to take it personal, anyone. Yeah.
And so having the temporary measures in place gives those politicians something to lean back on, and also it shows the average person, you know, how great whatever infrastructure we're installing is. And that, you know, that groundswell of support will hopefully outweigh the grumps as we go.
And then we can start moving. Yeah. How long have you lived here?
So I grew up in Spokane.
Okay, so then you'll remember this. I forget what street it was downtown, maybe Post or something like that, between Riverside and Main. Mm-hmm. Closed it, just turned it into, you know, a walking street, and you can deliver stuff in there. I remember it was like all hell broke loose when that happened. It's like, oh, you're taking away parking. And it's one of my favorite places to walk now. Like, yeah. If I'm going from downtown to the park, like, I love that street. It feels great.
And the thing is, that's not as protected as it should be for it to be considered a true pedestrian street, because there's still local business access to that bank there. I believe you're talking about Wall.
Well, okay, yeah, Wall.
But you're right. It's so much quieter, and you don't realize how much quieter it is until you go back out onto Spokane Falls Boulevard or back out onto Main. That, you know, small section there is so nice, and you've got the Rocket Bakery is right there. And what they should do in the summer is they should completely close that off, throw some food trucks
in
there.
And you can activate that space even more.
Activate that space even more.
I've been thinking about, just for myself, you're talking about calming. Like, I'm looking up and down and around when I'm walking down that section instead of, like, looking for people who are going to hit me.
So
it's like, yeah, I get it.
Well, and, you know, you talk about looking around. That's something that I think a lot of people don't realize when they're driving, is how much information your brain is processing and how quickly it has to process it. Your brain is just performing calculus at insane rates in order to, you know where you are spatially and regulate your speed and everything else. And as a result, it's incredibly stressful. Any minute distraction, taking your eyes off of the road, next thing you know, the guy in front of you is braked and you've rear-ended him, you know.
Yeah, we don't see that 100 times a day around this town.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but when you're walking, your brain is performing those same calculations at a rate that it was meant to. You know, your brain was not meant to be traveling at 70 miles an hour.
So you're almost giving yourself like a level of stress by doing so.
Not a level, a supreme level of stress. And, you know, that's a big, when it comes to road rage is often a misfiring of that, misfiring of the fight or flight response. Because, you know, say someone, you're driving along, someone pulls out in front of you, you have to slam on your brakes, you know, this jerk, blah, blah, blah. It's because your brain recognizes this is a dangerous event, and you don't have a way to fly or flight away from that because you're in your car. And so next thing you know, you've got a road rage incident, which, you know, there was the road rage incident, or I'm assuming the road rage incident in Garland last week with the homicide. And one study in Canada found that 7% or nearly 7% of all road rage incidents result in a death.
Ooh.
So
that's big numbers.
And it, you know, it's only going to get worse.
Heavy.
It is heavy. It's only going to get worse as, you know, vehicles get larger and vehicles get faster. There's been a big call for traffic safety advocates to have speed limiters on cars, which is very easy to do. There's no reason for a car to go 120 miles an hour when the speed limit anywhere is, you know, 80 max, that sort of thing. But
it's so interesting, our culture. It's like I can just hear it now. Oh, it's un-American. Why can't I go 120? Do you need to?
Right. Like, but you know, I'm
go wearing, to the racetrack.
Exactly. Go to the racetrack. But you know, I'm wearing this shirt that says the automobile can go everywhere at the expense of children going anywhere. And it's not just children. In order to be a fully participating member of society, American society, you have to have a car.
True.
And, you know, we have different means of trying to provide transportation for people without a car or people who are unable to drive. But you just, by the nature of our society, do not get to participate fully.
That happens a lot in our world in the disability space. Transportation is the number one issue.
Yeah.
If people can't, you know, either afford a car, operate a car, car, they're, it's going to be hard for them to get to work and participate that way.
Yes. And that is, you know, a lot of workplaces ask you if you have reliable transportation, and, a lot of workplaces don't consider the bus reliable enough transportation.
Which is a shame.
Which is a shame, especially as, you know, I'm a big fan of Spokane Transit. I think I've never had a bus show up more than a minute
late. I know, they're incredible, right? I know, I've been riding the bus for a long time as a kid. That's how I got downtown to go, you know, maybe my mom was going to let me go to the park or something. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the STA, bless them. Thank you. Like, they take a lot of our workers out to Fairchild every single day. Mm-hmm. We informally called it the Skillskin Express because we have, you know, about 20, 25 people riding any given day on that bus.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of people's jobs. That is people, you know, interacting with the Air Force, people seeing, you know, what people with disabilities can do. And it's not possible without public transportation.
And the really difficult thing that I think, I don't want to lump all elected leaders into buckets, but I think elected leaders who control our transportation system and control transit tend to not recognize as much as they probably should how our built environment also prevents people from fully partaking in the public transit environment. So
I think I'd probably take that for granted. You know, so I've always just had a vehicle, so I didn't just really think about it.
Well, and you know, if you live on one side of an incredibly busy arterial, and especially if you have a disability, and a disability that affects your ability to get across that arterial quickly, you know, I don't know what it is about when some people get behind the wheel of a car, but the patience levels just drop dramatically. So, you know, I can only imagine if I've got a mobility device or something and I'm trying to cross Sprague, how difficult and scary and stressful it is to have these drivers sitting there, you know, come on. And, you know, they'll often rev at you or rev past, but you know, it only takes one or two bad interactions like that where you're like, all right, you know what? That bus line, I'm not even going to worry about it.
Yeah, I can see that. You're just like, no, that's not for me.
No.
And then you're out, you've taken out of that system.
Exactly. And, you know, so for me, I have two bus lines that run past my house. You know, one that goes toward the Valley Transit Center and one that goes toward downtown. But if one of, say, that downtown bus, if I didn't feel safe getting to that bus stop, then, okay, now I have to take the Valley Transit Center bus in order to get downtown. And it just creates a more inconvenient and lengthy commute for those people by no fault of their own. It's a life or death situation.
Right.
Like, I don't think people realize when you're driving everywhere how dangerous some of these roads truly are. And it's interesting because we put up the police will put up the trailers that have the speed sign.
Yep.
There's one directly across the street from Spokane Valley City Hall. Like, if the speeding is so bad right next to Spokane Valley City Hall that you have to have one of these, why is there not a cop posted there?
Fair point.
So, yeah. You know, and, you know, that is a prime spot, particularly because that's where the new Valley Library is. The new park is going in.
Yeah, right, we're there. Inviting people to exactly. The space.
We want people to come here. But
just by the nature of the built environment, it may keep people away.
Everyone north of Sprague and north of Appleway, that's a much more dangerous prospect to get to that library.
Yep, unless you drive.
Unless you drive. And even then, it's still, I mean, it's still dangerous. You just are surrounded by a box of steel.
Is this your profession? Like, how, like?
I'm a stay-at-home dad.
Okay. So you're, how many youngins are you taking care of?
I just have one, but he's insane.
So, nice.
Yeah. So we, I went to law school. I've got a lot of experience in fraud analysis. Prior to becoming a stay-at-home dad, I was a researcher for a commercial real estate company, a real estate appraisal company. So I've sort of got experience in a lot of things, but everything comes down to lots of research and boiling complex information down into somewhat simple
You're points. Good at it. 'Cause, it's like I feel like I could be 5 years old and start to understand how you're explaining this. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you.
So what's next? You talked about the city starting to maybe take on some of this. Mm-hmm. Spencer Gardner involved at all?
So Spencer Gardner is not involved in this aspect of things, or at least I'm sure he's involved on the city side of things. I haven't spoken to him about any of this.
You should find him one day, especially if the city says, hey, we really want to help. I mean, that guy gets around everywhere on his bike. He knows the hard truth about what it is like to commute in this town.
I feel like a lot of the city planners do. Yeah. And I think they have, you know, you've got people on the outside yelling for change, but you also have people on the inside who, even if they aren't necessarily empowered to enact the change that we're demanding, you know, right now because they're city employees, they recognize the problem at hand and are consulting with, you know, city council and are presenting ideas to them and are doing their what they can on the inside while we're doing what we can on the outside. So it's, you know,
so we just got to unify the voices to like just create a better environment for us to be in, to live in, to experience.
And it's a matter of making it more livable for everybody. It's not a matter of, we talk a lot in the Spokane Reimagined group about how do we ensure that our language isn't like us versus them, you know, pedestrians and bicyclists versus motorists, because, you know, I'm a motorist too. We have two cars. Everyone, most of the people in the group also have cars, but it's a matter of, you know, where can we find the ways that we can make the road safer for everyone, and how can we alleviate the concerns of drivers up front. Some concerns are going to be unfounded that you just got to ignore. And I think it's important for politicians and for public works to recognize that. But some are very well-founded, and you got to make sure that you're able to differentiate those. But take the concerns that are well-founded for motorists and try to work on those. But, you know, also the great thing about temporary measures is if it doesn't work, we change it.
Yep. Well, I love that aspect. Yeah, it's not permanent.
It's not permanent. You know, I'm no planner. Like, I'm just some guy who sat down and said, this is what I would like to see. But, you know, if the city sits down and has their own maps, the key is to sit down and do something. Then you can figure out what works, what doesn't work, and iterate from there.
Well, and as that coalition builds, every movement's got to start with one.
Exactly.
I'm glad it's you. And and what can our listeners do to help? Because I know some of you are like, yep, he's speaking right to my heart. So what can they do? How do they join this cause?
Well, to join our cause, you can go to SpokaneReimagined.org. Right now, we're building the website, but it's got a map, multiple maps that show the tram, show the network that we envision, and it has an email sign up. That's the big thing. Once you get on the email list, you'll get our blasts. But more so than that, more so than joining our particular group, I think it's important for your listeners to voice their opinion and their lived experience to elected officials, to city council, to the mayor, because that's what is most valuable to them, but that's also what is most persuasive. So, you know, I've had members of the group ask me to provide feedback on comments before they read them to city council. And more often than not, I'm like, this is perfect because it's your voice.
Yep.
And I think that's really important for your listeners to recognize is, you know, their lived experience, and especially their lived experience for the listeners who don't drive or drive very infrequently, that is so critical because, you know, most policymakers just by default are drivers. And that's their lived experience. And so if you can provide your lived experience to them and show them how, you know, these overly wide streets make it so you can't reach your preferred bus stop, or, you know, you have to traverse 20 lanes of traffic, it seems like, to get from your bus stop to your work, you know, whatever it is, there are ways that your voice is the most important thing when it comes to ensuring that our electeds follow through on what the Spokane Reimagine group is working toward.
Well, cheers to that. I'm feeling inspired. I know I want to talk to our employees who ride the bus. It's like, we need to, you know, reimagine what can happen. And
well,
you heard it here. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate your time here. Look, you had a thought though. Please finish.
Well, I just want to say, you know, you're located in the East Central area, and this is the prime area that we need to be investing in more permanent transit infrastructure that makes people feel safe. You know, I travel along Trent pretty frequently, and it can be a very dangerous corridor. So
I know when we have people come here on the bus, like, we warn them about coming over Havana if they come that way, if they're on Trent. Like, even sometimes when we have classes here, we go pick people up at the bus stop with our vans because we just know it's not safe to just go 1.5 blocks to get to us.
And that's criminal. I mean, it really, of all the people who should be able to get around safely and securely, you would think, you know, people with disabilities would be at the very top. And I think it's important for our leaders to recognize that, you know, we all have to get around to this built environment, regardless of, you know, what we think we should be doing. Like, some people have to get around East Central on foot.
Yeah, they do. A lot of people.
And we need to ensure that they're safe.
You heard it here, everybody. Get involved. Let your voice be heard. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.